Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to another edition of the Belfast Men's Health Group podcast with myself, Paul O'Kane. I will be interviewing Robert O'Brien, who is an actor and an author. But before we get talking to Rob, he's going to tell us, when we do get talking to him, he's going to talk about his book, Just One More Drive, A True Story of a Stuttering Homosexual and His Race Car. But before we get that, before we get into the book, Rob, thanks very much for agreeing to do our podcast. And just tell us a wee bit about yourself, about your background, maybe what your influences are, and maybe even how you would describe yourself. So there's three questions in one.
Okay. Okay, Paul, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me on this podcast. It's a great opportunity to meet, connect, and share. So I am, my name is Robert O'Brien. I'm born and bred in Dublin. It was my home city. I went to school here. I was educated here. At the age of around 32, I decided to go over to Vancouver and try my hand as an actor, and I attended acting school over there. I ended up coming out as gay over there in acting school in a rather typically dramatic fashion. It's been a bit of a journey, and as you said, the actual title of my book, Just One More Drive, The True Story of a Stuttering Homosexual and His Race Car, pretty much says it all. I spent a lot of time struggling with both my stutter and my sexuality, and we'll get into that later. I know you have a few more questions lined up. I've been living over in Vancouver for the last 11 years. I became a citizen there a couple of years ago. I'm like now back home visiting family, which is great. My background itself, I'll talk a little bit about that, I think, a little bit later on. My academic background is in marketing. I graduated from Trinity College with an honors degree in marketing, but because of my speech, that never really came to anything. And then, things happened, and I ended up looking at the performance training. And then I've been working as an ESL teacher over in Vancouver. So I basically teach English to foreign speakers, and I've been doing that for about 20 years. That's what actually pays all of my bills. And Just One More Drive is my first book, and it's an autobiography. It's a journey that I went through. My influences, very simple. I am a huge car fan, and I'm a huge geek. So growing up, cars were my first love, and the race car in the title of the book is actually the glue that holds the whole story together. Cars are a major love, and the main reason for that is as a very scared, quiet child, I found cars were a safe space, and I felt safe in a car. And growing up, then cars were a big part of my life, and that's why I actually studied marketing at the time. I'm a geek as well, so science fiction is a very close second. In the book, there's a number of geeky references, that's where the acting side of things and going to Vancouver came about. At the time that I went over, sorry, I'm blocking here. Let me just get a little more mechanical. Vancouver, when I went over, was known and is still known as Hollywood North. A lot of shows were shot there, and at the time they were shooting science fiction shows like Stargate SG-1 and Battlestar Galactica. And I had this kind of dream of being a science fiction actor over in Vancouver.
Now, you've You've sort of nearly answered a wee bit of my second question, which is Canada. And you've explained a wee bit, but was there anything else that drew you to Canada, drew you to Vancouver, more so than maybe going to America, down into Hollywood?
No. The funny thing is, when I actually went over to Vancouver, I'd spent a couple of years on a stuttering recovery course, and I'd gained a good handle on my speech. But I felt going over to America itself, I just didn't think I was quite ready for it. And the other reason for Canada and Vancouver was actually specifically for the science fiction scene. I really wanted to work in science fiction because, as a geek going back, I was always fascinated by this whole idea of, you know, getting to save Earth every single week. And I could phone home and go, "Hey, Mom, I just saved Earth again on set today." And that's actually why. And even thinking back to it, Paul, like, I literally didn't do any research. I had figured I was in my early 30s. I'd spent a lot of time holding back in life, and I figured if I, you know, didn't go now, that I wouldn't go. So I did very little research. I was laser focused on going to Vancouver. I jumped on an aeroplane and landed there with, you know, really the only plan of going to acting school for 6 months. Looking back, it was crazy. I don't know what I was thinking, but, you know, it certainly makes for a fairly entertaining story.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now you're in Canada, and I'm sort of digressing a wee bit. What are you driving now? What's your car?
Oh, my God. Well, life didn't turn out the way I actually wanted. I've only begun driving in Canada at the moment, and I'm driving around in a 2001 Toyota Echo, which is basically a Yaris with a boot tacked on. So it's a very modest car. I've actually christened her Doris, and I do actually blog about the car every single month. Right. On my own website, and I do that because I really only began driving in the last 10 or so months. I had gotten used to living over in Vancouver, taking the bus, taking transit everywhere, and that was in part out of just cost. Mm-hmm. As I said, I work as an ESL teacher. That's what actually pays the bills, and you know, I've been very lucky in that kind of job, but it's not the best paying job, so it's taken me a good bit of time to start driving there. So it's a very modest car, but I, you know, have to say, because it's an older, more basic car, there's nothing really that can go wrong. So it's been a brilliant steed.
She's been a brilliant steed. Well, Rob, you're talking to a man that knows absolutely nothing about cars. I can change a puncture, but that's probably my limits. Okay, moving on then. So now, getting down to, tell us a wee bit about your book then, Just One More Drive. You can get into that now for the next 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay, yeah. Well, so I mean, as I said, it's been a bit of a funny journey. I'm not someone who would have thought of himself as a writer, and I didn't ever plan on writing a book. Mm-hmm. What happened, how the book began, so at about the age of 35, I'd been living over in Vancouver for a couple of years. I'd done the actor training. I tried to make it work, but because of my stutter, I was never able to really get past the audition process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, life over there, moving and just jumping on a plane, going overseas, I didn't really plan it out. And life was a little bit of a challenge. And I was coming home for a family wedding at the age of about 35. And I, you know, wasn't really earning a lot of a lot of money. I was single at the time. I didn't know where my life was going. The race car in the title of the book was a car that my father had kept and promised I could take it from him when I became a man. But in the 20 years that he'd kept it, it had become a fairly special classic car, which was worth a lot of money. And mm-hmm. I didn't have any money. There was no way I was ever going to have it or keep it. And in a very low point, there was a suicide attempt in the race car itself. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I failed at that. It, you know, if I'd been serious about it, I'm sure I could have made it happen. But I thank God that it was really more a cry for help, or mm-hmm. it was more me hitting rock bottom at mm-hmm. the time. And I can remember sitting in the car as I opened the space and cleared all the fumes out, and I was just like, wow, I'm such a pathetic man, I can't even kill myself effectively. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's really how I thought. And just to add a little bit of context, being overseas and having a stutter, there isn't any cure. And it's an ongoing process. And although I had learned tools and techniques to control it, I didn't have a support community over there. And being gay as well, I'd come out very late in life. And that was part of the reason for actually going over to Canada. I think mm-hmm. subconsciously mm-hmm. I needed a little bit of space to just figure myself out.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of away from home and away mm-hmm. from everyone who had basically known me since a child. But the other side of all of that was life had become fairly hard. I was feeling lost, and yeah, it was just a moment in time when I took that action. And after I had had that whole thought that I can't effectively even kill myself, I kind of thought, well, I don't really know where to go from this point, because I was literally sitting in the car going, I've nothing. And the book actually began as a journaling exercise. I thought, okay, if I've reached rock bottom, I don't particularly want to share this. I mean, which is the, you know, funny thing. I never thought I'd be sharing this. I just thought, right, let's keep our mouth closed and let's start writing. I thought if I went back to the very beginning and I began writing about my childhood with the whole, you know, bullying, with the whole stuttering, figuring out I was gay from a very early age, but hiding in the closet and just dealing with all of that mental weight. Mm-hmm. I thought if I can figure out at what point everything went wrong, I can fix myself. And that's really what I thought. I thought I needed to fix myself. And that's actually how the book began. It began as a very private journaling exercise, and I just kept on sort of going with it. And after about six or seven months, I kind of thought, wow, this you know, could actually be more than just a private journal. And I spent probably about 12 months writing it out and getting a rough draft finished. And then I met a friend who actually was a fellow author, and she put me in touch with a copy editor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I spent a further 12 months going back and forth on the book, and the actual copy editor at the time was actually opening up a small publishing house. And because they had worked on the book for so many years, and they were fully aware of what the book was, they had like sort of offered me a publishing deal, and that was actually what ended up being Tide Water Press. And that's really how the book happened. It, you know, took a couple of years, a lot of back and forth, a lot mm-hmm. of figuring out how to actually write it, what the focus was. Finishing the book, having the ending of the book, you know, happened. You know, it was, again, it was just about timing and everything falling into place. And you know, people ask me now, how do I feel about the book? And I'm actually very happy with it, because the ending of the book even though it's not the ending I may have wanted, it's the ending that actually makes the most sense. And I think it offers the most to someone else picking it up.
I have your book now, which you very kindly sent to me, but there's a chapter called Coach Nina Holds My Hand. Now, and I guess that some of our listeners may be saying, okay, Paul, you have a podcast, you have a guy on the podcast who has a stutter, and you're interviewing him over the phone. Are you setting him up here? I'm absolutely not setting you up, because you're doing a great job. I think you're doing brilliant. But in this bit where Nina holds your hand, part of this course or program was for you to phone people. I think, it must have taken absolute, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but great courage to do that. How did you overcome that, Rob?
I don't really think I ever have, Paul. One of the things, as I am in the book earlier on, when I go on my first speech course, they also had exercises where we practice picking up the phone and making phone calls, and we use our stuttering technique to advertise our stutter. And that's one thing I still really struggle with. In that chapter, Coach Nina Takes My Hand, the focus really was on having someone there just to hold my hand and be of support. I had thought to actually be a kind of strong man, that I had to do everything single-handedly. And as you read my book, you'll see where I'm setting myself up. Yeah. You know, having these huge goals, and I jump on a plane and I go over there all by myself. And it took a long time to find people. Over in Vancouver, I do have a select group of friends who I'd be very close to, and I would let them in. And to actually allow someone to be of support and to hold my hand when making phone calls. And in the chapter that you're talking about, it's not just a phone call, which would normally cause anybody who has a stutter a little bit of anxiety, because it's purely based on voice, and there's usually past trauma events with blocking on a phone or people hanging up. So that, for anybody with a stutter, the phone is usually a challenge. But to be on a course, and on the course that I was on, it was kind of making soft sales calls, where I would have to phone up and be of help to anyone who was looking at taking a course, and it's one thing, even being home here now, one of the high points of me coming home, I got to spend a day down in Cork on a stuttering course, and I've been away from the course for over 10 years, and when I knew I was coming home, I reached out here and I said, hey, could I come and just attend a day and just be with people who have a stutter, and work on my tools, work on my breathing. And that really helped me, and that got me very clear on not having to do things alone. And as men, and I think men have a harder time of this, because we are told to kind of toughen up and to man up, and we're supposed to be on the hustle to have our goals. And I think one of the missing things that I found, and you'll see it even in my book, is just finding out what actually being a man means to me, having to actually define that for myself. And I think for even all of your listeners too, getting to actually define what does it mean to me to be a man. And one of the things that isn't talked about as much is having support. And when I think back, I've been 20 years on my speech course. It's called the McGuire program. And I talk quite a bit about that, but it was a lovely feeling of just coming home, and it felt like coming home, because anyone who has a stutter would understand on a sort of deeper level what I'd be going through. And I'm sure it's the very same way anyone else who's got, say, drinking issues, or anyone who's got drug issues. It's a case of finding people who've been through the same thing. Why? Because they actually know exactly what you're talking about, and they've been through it. Mm-hmm. And it's that whole thing of like coming through the fire, coming through the challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I've seen where I can now help. I'm not a trained expert. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a speech pathologist. But I speak from my own lived experience, and I try to offer that. And that is, you know, that is actually the whole point of the book too. It's to mm-hmm. be of service. Mm-hmm. So that someone who's dealing with like any mental well-being issue can pick up the book, read it, and go, wow, someone's been through something similar. It may not necessarily be having a stutter or being homosexual, but all of us have our things. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing I felt, and you know why I couldn't, like getting the book even to this point, Paul, has been years of never letting it go. And the reason, and there have been times where it's like, I'm done. I don't want to talk about me having a stutter or being gay or coming out again. But why I keep doing it is because I think back to my teenage self, my 14-year-old self, who was in school stuttering, knew he was gay, clinged onto cars and video games for dear life because I was so scared and so lost. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wrote the book. It was for anybody who feels lost to be able to pick it up and go, wow, I'm not the only one. And to also see that there's help. Mm-hmm. And there really is help out there. And, you know, and I can't say more about that because it's the people. I've had people backing me up, propping me up when I couldn't do it myself. And that's key. Mm-hmm. Because I think all of us have points where like we just can't, and we actually need to ask for help. And again, as a like man, mm-hmm. I've had the hardest time asking for help. Yeah. And that was one of the other biggest lessons, because again, I've got to conquer my stutter. I've got to conquer being homosexual. I've got to fix myself, and it's only when I fix myself I can then let someone in. I was totally wrong. It's by actually letting someone in and allowing them to help you that you can actually see what you have to offer.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, it's just been really, I mean, people here, close family, have been fairly slow to read the book because they've said to me that they, you know, don't want to be hurt to actually read how I suffered. And yeah, I mean, yeah, suffering is part of it. But at this point in my own journey, mm-hmm. I can see that, you know, by actually opening up, by letting Coach Nina hold my hand, by letting people on the McGuire program help me mm-hmm. with my speech, by, you know, letting people in, mm-hmm. things have really it forced me to have to soften myself up and to be softer in how I talk and think and feel about me. Mm. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later, because I think you actually asked me about mental fitness, and I'll talk more about that.
The next question is just where we're leading on there very well. How do you now, like today, look after your physical and mental fitness?
Yeah, mental. Well, let's keep on going on mm-hmm. the mental
keep
side.
That one, yeah.
Yeah, the biggest lesson I learned from the book and from sharing it is there never was anything to fix, and I had to learn to be my own best friend, and that was one of the hardest lessons, because I was so hard on myself. If I ever had a speech block, I'd be mentally kicking myself in the arse. I'd be so mm-hmm. furious, so mad. I'd be calling myself a fool, a stupid idiot. Why is this never going to leave? You know, like, people think I'm stupid, look at their face, and you know, I'm worth nothing. And being gay only added to it, because, you know, that had its same sort of flavors to it. There was the same fear, avoidance, wanting to not deal with it, wanting to avoid it. And having to eventually deal with it. So one of the things, like having a stutter, we often disclose it and we'll tell people that we have a stutter. And being gay, I've also had to learn to disclose that. And in both those cases, there's a very similar feeling. There's a very similar risk. And I found I have to be very vulnerable in those situations, and it's scary. And by learning to be my own best friend and softening how I speak to myself, I've learned to kind of coach myself. When I have a good speaking situation, I'll say to myself, I did a great job there. I'm really proud of me. And, you know, the same kind of thing in like anything, because as well, I was a chronic perfectionist. I wanted everything to be perfect all the time. And it never is. Everything is a little bit sort of cobbled in the last moment. And I found that's how life works. And again, softening that, like, okay, it wasn't perfect. Maybe I didn't give the answer I planned, but I gave the answer I gave. Well done for giving the answer and standing up. Mm-hmm. And that's been a huge shift. That's been a huge shift. And that's only really happened for me in the last 3 or 4 years. And I think age has a little bit to, you know, give to it too. As I get older, I'm caring less about having to impress people. I'm caring less about having to, you know, talk a certain way or do a certain thing. So that's been great. But in the mental well-being side, that's been a huge shift. Physically?
You've heard the old saying that there's no one harder on you than yourself.
Yeah.
And
oh God, and yeah.
And what advice would you give to your friends? That's the advice you give to yourself. But it's never, it's always, the advice you give to yourself is always harder, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's always tougher.
It really is.
Yeah.
And you know, again, men, and as men, I think we, you know, don't, it's just a kind of harder thing to open up and to even talk about, because it's like feelings, and it's those kind of things of like, well, I'm feeling this, and feelings are kind of seen as, well, sure, you know, action as opposed to having a feeling. Now it's actually both. I mean, I think action is also crucial, but we are our worst critics. Now, I had heard that. I heard people say that. And even in acting school, and, you know, when I was trying to be fluent and I was stuttering through a cold read, and I'd be going through hell, and I'd be asking myself, why am I putting myself through this? And why do I need to be perfect? And one thing I'm still working on with the whole stutter, Paul, is why am I so hesitant to just be authentic? I have a stutter. This is how I sound. And I'm still working on that side of things, because it still catches me out. I'll go for fluency and it won't be as stress-free as being authentic and just saying, hey, give me a second. I've got a stutter. Because that's actually the more powerful answer, and it's the softer one. It takes the pressure off me, so I don't have to beat myself up as hard. But it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, and then on the, I mean, physical side of health, I think, physical health and mental health, I think both go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Mental health can actually take a lot of effort, and I find physical health, So for myself, I'm a sort of gym fan. I'll hit the gym. I wasn't ever a kind of heavy sports player in school. I was quite a small child, and I was always scared of these kind of, you know, full physical contact sports. But as I've gotten older, being in the gym, doing physical exercise, lifting weights, I find it's very beneficial to get out of my head. So if I'm overthinking, and even in the space of mental health, if I'm overthinking something,
how tall are you, Rob?
I'm very average. I think I'm 5'8".
That's not wrong. You're taller than me.
So, well, I mean, I'm like nothing feckin' tall, but just physical exercise just to kind of get out of my head, because I'm someone who will overthink things, and so I find physical exercise helps that. And then once I've actually been out, once I, you know, feel like I've been doing things, then I can kind of think a little bit more. But then also, I think physical exercise ties into good self-esteem, and on a physical level, and again, speaking as a single gay man who's well into middle age, I'm kind of like, right, well, this, you know, physical body is all I have now. And being physically fit, and, you know, being able to actually lift heavy sort of weights with like other men in a gym, I feel good. And it's a very personal thing, and it's, I mean, ego, but it's a good ego in the sense that it's like, wow, I'm sitting here lifting heavy weights, and other guys are lifting heavy weights, and I feel good and I look good. And that, I think, has a beneficial self-esteem knock on.
There's no doubt. I think they're definitely linked. There is no question. Physical and mental fitness is absolutely linked. Yeah. And if you've got both, well, you're in great shape. Now, I suppose we're moving on. We've got a couple more questions, and I'm sort of this one. This is a tricky one, and I haven't written it down, so you haven't gotten it in advance. I've just made it up here as well.
Okay.
Suppose, what makes you happy, or are you content, or are you happy now, or where are you now in your own sort of space in your life? Are you content, or are you happy? Do you ever?
That's a great question to ask me. My sister once asked me years ago, "Was I ever happy?" And it's always stuck in my head. I think she asked me this about 20 years ago. And it's still stuck, because growing up with a daughter and being homosexual, life was really about hiding it or faking it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even like as a, I mean, you know, again, geeky kind of kid who was into science fiction as opposed to the, you know, soccer in school. And like, this is, you know, again, 20, 30 years ago, before being a geek was actually cool. I don't know if I ever learned how to be happy or what being happy was. Am I happy now? I'm much, much more at peace, and I'm much more at ease in my own skin. And I feel a lot more grounded, and I feel a lot more self-assured. In terms of my professional life, you know, that's one area that I feel I'm still really working on, and I would like to be earning more. I would like to be doing more. Mm-hmm. And that would give me more options. But am I happy? I'm probably happier now than I've ever been.
Well, that's good.
You know, great, and I mean, deadly honest when I say it. I'm not just saying that, and I think one of the caveats with being happy is people think being happy it's an ongoing feeling, but it, you know, ebbs and ebbs and it flows. Overall, I'm a lot happier now.
Sort of gauge happiness a wee bit like motivation. Some days you're really highly motivated, and other days it's a struggle. But overall, it's nearly just a balance. It's finding that balance of contentment or happiness. Right, Rob, we have come to the conclusion. We've come to the last question, if you want. That time has absolutely flown in. Goodness me, it goes quick when you're enjoying yourself. Okay, where can our listeners find your book? What website do you have it on? Or where can they find it? Are you on Twitter and Facebook? So now is your opportunity to plug yourself.
Now is my opportunity to plug myself, which is when I get the most nervous, because I think, oh no, now it's the sales part. The book itself is on sale in most of the bigger book stores, both here and in the UK. Amazon has it too, which is, I'd say, the fastest and the easiest way to find it. You can find out more about me and follow me on my own website, which is www.justonemoredrive.com. And I'm on Facebook Facebook. I'm not on Twitter.
Okay. And just to confirm, folks, it is called Just One More Drive, the true story of a stuttering homosexual and his race car. And the guy's name is Robert James O'Brien. Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for agreeing to take the time to chat with us, and safe flight home to Vancouver tomorrow.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very, very much.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you.